sports and weather, beginning with Major League Baseball. The Brewers lost to Miami 5-4 in 12 innings. Coincidentally, the Cubs lost to San Francisco 5-4 in 13 innings. So the Brewers still own a game-and-a-half lead over the Cubbies in the NL Central. The White Sox shut out the Cardinals 4-0. Tonight, the Brewers play in Pittsburgh. The Cubs and White Sox are off. Northwoods League Baseball, the Kenosha Kingfish beat the Madison Mallards 8-7 last night. The Kingfish play in Battle Creek tonight. Now the WGTD forecast from the National Weather Service. On this Thursday, July 12th, sunny and hot. Today's high 89 inland, cooler near Lake Michigan. Overnight, 68 for the low. Even hotter tomorrow, sunny with a high of 93. The heat index near 97. Here are the new numbers just in. Wind from the south at 6, humidity 76%, 73 degrees in both Racine and Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 8:11, the morning show is next. Support for the WGTD Morning Show comes from UW Parkside, now offering the Sports Management Master's Degree Program. Students learn the business skills necessary to succeed in today's competitive sports environment. Flexible degrees for in-demand careers. Find out more at uwp.edu. And we welcome you into the Thursday, July 12th, WGTD Morning Show. My name is Dave McGrath. Gregory Berg is preoccupied right now. He's actually hosting a roundtable discussion out at Gateway's Hero Center in Burlington. So I'll be filling in today. And we are joined by a longtime Morning Show visitor, Nan Calvert.
Good morning.
And Nan's got a guest with her, Joan Rory. We're going to let Nan introduce Joan in just a second. But we generally have new listeners coming in either to the station or just the program itself. So, Nan, why don't you reintroduce yourself? You've been here many, many years, but your positions have changed from time to time. Tell us all about yourself.
Well, yes, I have been doing this for a number of years, and it's my honor and privilege to be able to bring important people from our community and surrounding areas, like Joan Rory, to talk about the state of the environment, if you will, for Racine, Kenosha, and other places. And yes, I have been doing it in various and sundry capacities, and I hope to continue doing it until I'm old and doddering and can't carry on a conversation anymore.
Like Greg Berg.
Like Greg Berg, yes. See, we can do that because he's not here now. And so today, I'm happy that Joan Rory can be here. So thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me. Always a pleasure.
Yes, it is. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Now, you are, shall we say, a high-profile person in Racine, which is a different way of saying famous. And but, you know, when we do have new listeners, we like to have our guests introduce themselves. So what I'd like you to do, Joan, is give a brief but incredibly detailed bio of yourself. How did you get to where you are? How did you come to Racine and come to do this sort of thing? And then eventually we'll get to talking about visioning Greater Racine.
Well, being the consummate deadhead I am, I will say it's been a long, strange trip. born and raised Racine, Wisconsin, and like every 18-year-old, when you go away to university, which I went to the Brown School of Broadcasting, Dave McGrath, but changed my mind, went to university, and vowed I would never come back to my home community, because that's what you do when you're 18. So when I did meet my now husband in Minneapolis, he was lucky enough to find a job here. We started a family. And again, we vowed in 5 years, we will be out of here. Well, that was 34 years ago.
Wow.
I'm not going anywhere.
Luckily for us.
I've become quite entrenched and very proud and honored to be part of the community I live in. And I've spent almost 30 years in educational technology. So I did a stint with Kenosha Unified as their distance learning facilitator. And in that stint, I ended up meeting a gentleman named John Anderson from the Kenosha Water Department. And together, the two of us started an organization called Adventure Kids Learning, which we've talked about on the show before. We Our mission with Adventure Kids is to bring the global water crisis into classrooms and foster next generation water advocates. So on a crazy little twist and turn, I ended up at a software company in California, but back in my community after working with them, and started really becoming very active in my community. I've always been active in the theater community, but never really reached out past that. Having worked out of Bakersfield, California, I lived in London, it was time for me to now dig back into my community. So I started networking, and in one particular case, I ended up at a Racine Sustainable Business Network meeting, met several people that were talking about corporations, organizations that are using green initiatives in Racine, and that's right up my alley, and how they can foster that community for other organizations. Met a man named Tom Bueller, who is owner of Butter Buds, and ended up learning about an initiative called Visioning a Greater Racine. And in a job-seeking mode, I started working with them as a contracted consultant in January of 2016. And in October of last year, I accepted the position of executive director. So that's as detailed yet brief as I could make
it. Yes, succinct but wonderful. So before we talk about you being the executive director of Visioning Greater Racine, I'd like you to talk a little bit more about your global water initiatives, the kinds of things you've done, where you've gone, and some information about exactly what you do when you're there and how then it relates back to this community.
Sure. Well, you know, water is my compass. If you're from this area and you don't go out of your way to drive past Carthage or to drive down by, you know, Gateway in Racine, you're not connected to the water. Mm-hmm. And to me, I've always felt water is my east. I know where I am. I have my bearings. So it really came to light with me when this gentleman, John Anderson from Kenosha Water, called and said, "Hey, I'm with this organization called Wisconsin Water for the World. We are taking a trip to Guatemala," and no, I was with Kenosha Unified at the time. "We're going to be building a sustainable water system." Now, this is a developing country, and at present, the women are mostly spending 4 to 6 hours of their day getting water for their families. Our students in Kenosha Unified turn on a tap, flush a toilet, don't think twice about it. We take it for granted. He wanted an opportunity and brainstorm with me about how we can bring this experience to students. So we brainstormed, and we decided that we would target the fourth grade classes. This will be 10 years old in March.
Wow.
So we're about to celebrate our 10th, really, anniversary. So here I was. I pre-scheduled 11 fourth grade classrooms. I'm at Southport Elementary waiting for him on a mountain in Guatemala to turn on the camera, and we're going to Skype, and I've got 25 doe-eyed fourth graders because I'm pumping them up. And as we turn on the camera and the sound is explosions in the background, and John's got his ears covered, and he said, "Just give us a second. The pump was turned on. Those are celebration explosions." They love their cannons down here and their M80s. So it was literally me seeing John on a mountain in Guatemala, knowing what he was experiencing. And I, as soon as the M80 stopped, I said, I'm not going to be in a library next year. I will be with you. So I crashed that party. 10 years later, we have been working in the Sololá region of Guatemala. Again, the organization is Wisconsin Water for the World. It's the charitable arm of the Wisconsin sector of American Water Works. Mm-hmm. A team of volunteers goes down to Guatemala. We work with an incredible NGO called Agua para la Salud. He's an expat from Washington State that runs that. And we help build sustainable water systems. When I'm there, what we do is host video conferences from the tank, from a village home, maybe from the village school. And we connect via video conference to classrooms around the world talking about water. Water in a developing country, water where you are. Do you take it for granted? We often ask the students, how many sources of water do you have in your home? And I want you to count every sink, toilet, bathtub, washing machine. The average answer is 13 to 15. Wow. Then I ask, how many do you think the Guatemalan families have in their home? 4, 5. You know, we do grades 4 through 12, so the answers are varied. The answer is 0 because there's no indoor plumbing. So if the woman is or the girls in the family are getting water, there's no water source. But when a sink is installed or a pila, it's installed outside of their front door. So there's no running water. But when we leave, the systems usually accommodate about 50 families, and it includes a sink outside their front door.
For every family, a sink for every family.
About 50 families per tank that's built, so or per system usually. Mm-hmm. It's usually a two-tank system, and I'm using my hands because everyone in radio world can understand the elevation in Guatemala. But yeah, it brings back 4 to 6 hours of the day for the women in the village to maybe work textiles for economic, you know, for income, maybe help in the fields. They have large families. They can spend more time with their children, you name it. But they're buying back for the women literally 4 to 6 hours. I can't say enough about the people that have been involved in Kenosha. Katie Caro, which I think it's still Caro, but she just got married with the Kenosha Water Utility. Ed St. Peter has been so supportive with the people that have come with us, joined the team. John Anderson, Bob Carlson. There's quite a list of Kenosha Water Utility celebrities I could let rattle off.
You know, listening to you, I don't think that the vast majority of our listeners have any idea what it would be like to spend 4 to 6 hours accessing water just for your day. And I'm assuming that the water is sometimes not particularly, you know, what we would consider clean. Would that be correct?
Yes and no. Now, when you go down to a developing country with a number of water engineers, they bring water test kits. Mm-hmm. To be honest, often the water at the spring site where the water is, there's a spring capture mm-hmm. system that's part of the water system, that water is cleaner or less bacteria than the mm-hmm. water in the hotel sink
wow.
in Guatemala. So they're drinking pretty good, clean mountain water. However, when the systems are built, this last system did include some chlorination education. And when I say sustainable, it means that we're working with the NGO Agua para la Salud to make sure that this system will last 20, 25 years. We are not an organization that goes in and says, here, have at it, it's yours now. And if something happens, they weren't educated in how to fix it. Whereas Agua para la Salud has people on the ground there, they're in regular touch or contact with these villages. They know that if a mudslide brought some service lines down, they need to be repaired. If the pump isn't working, it needs to be repaired. It is a sustainable system. It is not ours, it is theirs, but they are educated in how to maintain, and in worst case scenario, we might go back and fix something that didn't work.
So what is the system that brings them water? Is it a well that you're building? Is it a pump system?
Good question. No, it's not a well. It is typically a spring capture system. So oftentimes several springs that come together close, it's captured in a cement tank. Mm-hmm. It's then put into a lower tank. And these are hand-built cement tanks. They're about, I think, oh, John will kill me, I think 2,500-gallon tanks that are built with a rebar skeleton and then cement layers, about five on the inside, five on the outside. So because of the elevation there, and we're at about 8,000 feet where we are, that water goes into a lower tank. It's pumped up into a higher elevation tank, same size, 2,500 gallons, and then PVC service lines do go down via gravity feed to the homes that it's servicing.
That's an enormous effort that you're putting forth, not only with the engineering, but also the people that are part of this program. And, there are obviously experts in the field, but there are also volunteers. So who volunteers for this sort of thing, and how do you become a volunteer?
Well, applications are always – well, no application. If you have a pulse and you want to trowel cement or dig service lines, and are we working with the community here too? A lot of prep work has to be done prior to us arriving for that 2 weeks. There are men in the village that are digging trench lines. They might be making a level surface for one of the tanks. It's actually a year-long process. So who goes down there? We've got, Clark Dietz engineers. We've got engineers with the water utility. This is a statewide organization. IT people. John's an IT guy. He's not an engineer, but we've had Rotarians. The Kenosha Rotary has been generous in funding part of the project, and we've had Rotarians join us on the trip because there's also components like health and hygiene. Now you've got water. 25% of Guatemalan children miss school every day because of waterborne disease. Now, as an educator, how do you maintain instruction? You're constantly going back and reviewing because 25% of your kids are gone. So the health hygiene component is big. We're learning now how to wash our hands, how to brush our teeth, how to keep that waterborne disease at bay so they can have a healthier, more productive school life.
Is this something that...
Why do you want to go?
Well, I'd love to. Yes,
Dave?
Actually, I would.
No.
Must you be bilingual to go?
Interestingly enough, Spanish is not the primary language. They are 23 languages in Guatemala, Mayan languages. You don't have to be bilingual. I am not bilingual. For the most part, our volunteers are not Spanish speakers. We do have... translators down there, but their primary language in the region we work in is Quechical. And what's cool too is when we do video conferences, we often get an opportunity to have students meet students. So we're in the school, and sometimes the students in Guatemala will teach a few Quechical words to the students in the United States. They might sing a song back and forth. But it really is bridging cultural mm-hmm. bridges. It's making those connections as well. We learned that in the first year because we were pushing science, science, science. And what we really found out was kids want to know other kids. How are you like me? How are you not like me? Mm-hmm. We had to build on that.
I think there are a lot of people who would like to volunteer but might find it daunting because of international travel and the time away. So there are other ways people can support besides physically volunteering, I'm sure.
Sure. It costs a range of $30,000 to $55,000 maybe to build these systems. So not only are all the volunteers paying out of their own pocket to travel, they are also raising money to build these systems. So we do have funding partners, Kenosha Rotary, Jacksonville Rotary. We have a church on the East Coast that has been a very generous funding partner. There are numerous funding partners that we have to raise money for. So when you say daunting, I'm not the master of physical labor. I'll put that right on the table. I am the host of the video conference connections, but I have done my share of tying wire on skeleton frames. There's something anyone can do. Building water meters, putting the meter pieces together. It's not like you're...
You don't have to be the one building the cement.
No,
tank.
As a matter of fact, that is really left to the experts. Agua para la Salud has a team of very skilled masons. And we all get the traditional ceremonial, you know, troweling on of the cement, and we all get giggled at by the masons because it's, you know, it's not a professional job, but we do it, and we don't really speak their language, but we get along, and we can communicate quite well with each other and laugh with each other.
Can I jump in just a second,
Absolutely.
Nan? Just to remind everybody, this is WGTD, The Morning Show. Our guests are Nan Calvert and Joan Rory. I had a quick question as I sit here. Is it a realistic long-term goal at all to get them indoor plumbing, or is this what they're going to have forever and ever?
I can't speak for Wisconsin Water, but I don't see it changing. It's working. It's very the poorest of the poor. They're still using outhouses. The schools sometimes have flush toilets. Sometimes a organization came in with very good intent, put these toilets in, but the water system that was connected to them, you know, died. And so we have been in the practice of fixing those water systems to make the flush toilets work. But I don't foresee it, but, you know, again, I'm not the expert.
Are you branching out beyond Guatemala?
Well, yes. We actually have a few college professors, Matt Zorn and Patrick Floffel from Carthage, who are involved in a property in Ometepe, Nicaragua, and it's called the Finca de Esperanza, the Farm of Hope. So I've been lucky enough to go there and kind of do a recon mission and meet some of the people involved. But there's a very great potential, because can you imagine an island in a freshwater lake and the water is not, you know, is toxic. Mm-hmm. So there's work to do there. So yes, we have spread out. And it's been John and my dream always to go anywhere. You know, my bucket list would be Kenya or, you know, in Africa, a country there, to learn how they're getting water. Mostly it is wells. But, you know, we're still chipping away at Central America. There's enough work to do there.
You know, I think it's a testimony to how water links us all, and how absolutely all life on Earth depends on access to clean, fresh water, not only for drinking, but so many other things. And we, in the United States, most of us never think for a minute about that. We go in, turn on the tap, and we're done until the next time we do it. So thank you for what you do, except Flint, Michigan.
And that, when I was just going to say, I never would have thought that a water issue or crisis would be in my own backyard. Mm-hmm. So I have done work with Mott Middle College High School in Flint, Michigan. I've hosted a 24-hour virtual conference, which I call Ripples Make Waves, from Mott Middle College. When you know that it takes upwards of 30 gallons to cook a turkey and they're using bottled water to prepare their Thanksgiving meal, that's in our own backyard. And mm-hmm. we have to be ever diligent on this incredible body of water with Waukesha diversion.
Yes.
You know, we have our share of water issues. We need to be ever diligent on protect.
Yeah.
Foxconn.
You know, just because we are water rich doesn't mean it's always going to be there for us.
You're absolutely right.
And the amount of fresh drinkable water we have on Earth is minuscule comparatively. I mean, we see it every day. We have the lake and we have streams and rivers and all those kinds of things. But anyway, yes. So thank you for all you do.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Now then, Joan Rory, you're the executive director of Visioning Greater Racine. Tell us what you do and what exactly does Visioning Greater Racine do?
I love that question because, again, it goes back to me vowing as an 18-year-old, I'm out of here and I'm never coming back. Visioning a Greater Racine was really started by a conversation among friends. Tom Bueller of Butterbuds, Mike Frontier on the Racine Unified School Board, and Tammy Hayward, retired educator, Bill Streeter with UW Parkside, a conversation among friends, kind of reminiscing about the glory days of our community. Remember when our school district was a national model? Remember when we didn't have unemployment? You could walk out of a manufacturer having been let go or whatever, walk across the street and get hired by another one. Remember when we were a thriving community? Well, as a company like Butterbuds is needs a legacy, and we're not, they weren't finding that young people are coming up in the pipeline. So how do we look at our community, reimagine it, and think about a community that young people want to be in, live in, work in, and play in? How can we look at this community and make it flourish again? So they were having this conversation and ended up finding out that other communities had the same question. The primary community that they were drawn to was Chattanooga, Tennessee. In the mid-1980s, Chattanooga, Tennessee was called Smog City, worst air quality than L.A. They had suffering a manufacturing loss, highly racially segregated, downtown empty, everything that, you know, we've experienced. So they ended up taking a road trip to Chattanooga, and they met a woman named Dr. Eleanor Cooper, who was executive director of an initiative called Chattanooga Venture. What she did and her organization was decide to listen to the community. You know, we're not going to go to the corporations. We're not going to go to government. We're going to listen to what the people in the community say. This is what we need in order for this to happen. In order for us to be alive again, thrive again, flourish again, what do you think we need? Well, a couple of things came out of that. One, a multi-million-dollar aquarium that people said, let's develop the waterfront. They had a trestle bridge that was the government wanted, municipality wanted it torn down. Well, it separated the African-American side of the river and the white side of the river. And an initiative that came out of this was, let's refurb that bridge. Let's put a band shell at one end. Let's put walkways on each side. Let's bring families together. If you take that bridge down, it's not just a metaphor anymore. You've really segregated us. So they started, you know, feeling this renaissance. They ended up getting Volkswagen of North America to headquarter in Chattanooga. And one of the reasons Volkswagen said they were drawn was because of that renaissance spirit. The people were saying, this is what we need. Let's, you know, put that into action. They also looked at Rockford. Rockford, similar story, empty downtown, losing manufacturing. Long story short, they decided that they wanted this initiative to happen in Racine. So they hired Dr. Cooper. She came and interviewed about 50 community members as a kind of a feasibility study. And unanimously, everyone Eleanor spoke with said, yes, we can do that in Racine. Let's do that. So on January 1st of 2016, Tom Buehler said, "What I have this little thing called Visioning a Greater Racine, and I'm looking for some part-time. We'd like to launch listening sessions in the community. Would you be able to coordinate those?" So those started in June of 2016. We hosted 47 listening sessions in the community, and I'll say Greater Racine means everything east of the eye. And I love that saying, east of the eye. Mount Pleasant, Sturtevant, Caledonia, Wind Point, Elmwood Park, and the city. By June of 2017, we had completed 47. We had had conversations with 1,300 people, and we got 4,300 ideas from those sessions. Mm. Yeah, 4,300 ideas. So everyone was asked the same question. By 2030, what does Racine need to be a flourishing community we're all proud to call home? So a table of 10, and these were structured, facilitated conversations, brainstormed and voted on their top five initiatives. Those top fives were brought forward, and we had a small team review all of the top fives and basically break down what the community asked for into 11 categories. I usually can rattle off those categories, but I, you know, these categories are such as education and youth, social justice, transportation, healthy, productive lives, thriving economy, model of environmental sustainability, the one that we are cheerleaders for, pride and positive self-image. Do you know that the transplants in our community are our biggest cheerleaders, mm-hmm. and our natives are our biggest critics. Mm-hmm. We need to turn that around. Mm-hmm. Diverse and collaborative leadership. Our community wants our municipalities to collaborate and work together. That's been a challenging one. So our community has asked for it. So now these 11 categories are action teams. We call them WAVE teams. I came up with the acronym WAVE, Working Action Vision and Engagement. We have over 200 people active on these WAVE teams working to bring what the community asked for into action.
And so so those are your partners within your organization, within Visioning Greater Racine. But I know that you have community partners as well. For example, how do you work with Greening Greater Racine and other groups like that?
Absolutely. Great question. I believe we formally have over 40 community partners, Gateway, Parkside, Emerson or Incinerator. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, you put me on the spot now.
I'm sorry.
Educators Credit Union was very generous in getting us started. Racine Unified School District, Higher Expectations, Greening Greater Racine. So it's important that one of our missions really is to break down silos. We are a community of silos. Why are there so many organizations doing the same thing? Together, we're going to be better. So Greening Greater Racine and their initiatives and their organizations, really, they're definitely part of the model of environmental sustainability. Dave Rhodes, you know, Mr. Environment, he's all over this. I can give you a specific example because in 5 years, our regional landfill will be full, the Kestrel Hawk landfill. Mm-hmm. What are we going to do? We need to minimize waste. It takes about 5 years to get a landfill certified and going. We're in crisis mode. Mm-hmm. We also happen to be the international headquarters of that little company called Incinerator by Emerson. But by using that Incinerator, you can reduce waste going into the landfill by 30%. You know, to talk with Michael from Emerson, who's part of, and actually what happened was, there was a regional zero waste committee that started by Jim Palinek in the city of Racine. And it was Dave Rhodes, Jim Palinek, and they were discussing how can we get word out to people that we need to minimize our waste. What are we going to do? That actually was just absorbed by the model of environmental sustainability group because they were really kind of doing the same thing. And the people in the model of environmental sustainability want to have a campaign about individual use plastics, reducing or minimalizing waste. So now we have an even greater team that's addressing this issue. We need to do something about our... Did you know you could put a turkey carcass in an incinerator?
No.
According to Michael... At Incinerator, it is definitely – now, I imagine he's got the big Bertha of Incinerators, but just using your Incinerator the way it was designed to be used, we can reduce 30% of what goes into that landfill.
Right, because food waste accounts for quite a bit of what fills up landfills as well as plastic and other things. And certainly composting is always an option, not necessarily for a turkey carcass, but –
au contraire.
Well, I know, it's
because
true.
Because we did meet with the Compost Crusader
yes.
of Milwaukee.
Yes.
And she's actually talking about a possible pilot program further south.
And interestingly enough, there are a lot of places that don't allow composting. They don't allow backyard composting. And so those are the kinds of things, I suppose, that that particular team, you know, municipal ordinances
right.
will be addressing at some point in time.
And it makes sense to have the right people at the table.
Right.
What's really cool about the model of environmental sustainability group now is it's including Kenosha DPW.
Mm-hmm.
They're as much a part of this waste minimalization effort as we are. We're not just talking now about Racine.
East of the island.
Greater Racine.
Yeah.
We're talking about initiatives that, you know, neighboring communities need to be a part of.
Right. And I just want to give a shout out to all of us who live west of the eye, because Racine doesn't end at the eye.
Nope.
We're out there too.
We've been called on that. But the the answer to that is this is an enormous initiative.
Yeah.
And we do.
And you have to start someplace.
Yeah, you have to start somewhere. But right now with managing 11 teams, I have one staff member, Trevor Young. So we are small but mighty, but overseeing the operations of these 11 teams and major community engagement and making sure the right people are at the table. How can we talk about mental health care in our community if our two primary health care providers aren't at the table, if clients aren't at the table, if NAMI, if Friendship, you know, the Friendship Clubhouse, if the organizations that impact mental health services? I'm happy to say and really proud of the fact that we are doing a good job getting the right people at the table. Now, there's always room for improvement because I'll be very honest, we're an incredibly, beautifully, wonderfully diverse community. Our organization and our efforts need to reflect that and embrace it. Mm-hmm. So we need to make sure that everyone has a place at the table, everyone has a voice, and that everyone is working on these efforts together.
I know that there are lots of ways that people can help by being part of a team and that sort of thing, but I know you're also having a fundraiser going on. Can you talk a little bit about that for us?
Yes, I always call them fundraisers.
Yes.
That's my little thing.
Fun and funds.
And again, it's another example of partnership, because if you've ever heard of the Great Lakes Brewfest, which is the major fundraiser for the Kilties, Brewfest Partners out of Caledonia, Kurt Foreman is the president of that, and he approached me and said, I'm looking to have a pop-up beer garden, looking for a nonprofit to help me with it and benefit from it. And I said, you had me at I'm looking for.
And beer.
Yeah. Yeah. What can I say? So, yes, starting today at 3 o'clock and running through Sunday, so 3 till, I think, 9, 3 till 10, 12 till 10 tomorrow, 12 till 10 Saturday, and 12 till 8 Sunday, pop-up beer garden, the very first one in Racine, at Smolensky Park on Stewart Road in Mount Pleasant.
Will there be other pop-up beer gardens in the future?
Depending on how we do with this one, of course. Another mention of community partners. Every day we have a community partner. Tonight from 5 till 8, the Over Our Head Players will be in costume, and all tips will go to the Over Our Head Players, a fantastic little My Home Theater in Racine downtown. Tomorrow it's Wild Root Market. Saturday is Racine Theater Guild, and Sunday from 2 till 5 is the Volunteer Center of Racine County. Mm-hmm. So these organizations will have volunteers at the event, hopefully bring people because, you know, there's beer to be had, and support not only their organization, but they're part of something new too. I should also add, it's a pilot program for a pet-friendly park in Mount Pleasant.
Nice.
So dogs will be welcome, and as how that, you know, determining how that goes, it could lead to future pet friendly
events.
Yep.
Let me interject quickly. You're enjoying this conversation on the WGTD morning show. And before I let Nan get back to grilling you, why don't you throw out your website, Joan?
Sure. It's one word. So www.visioningagreaterracine.org.
And they can find out if they're driving in their car and they can't take notes right now, they can look at the website for the
Facebook
events.
Facebook, too, is all of our events, all of our team meetings are listed there. And we're starting to get so filled with our calendar with projects like Hatch. Hatch was in Kenosha. They're going to have a Racine event. It's a entrepreneurial pitch project. Oh my gosh, I can't even think of the things that we've got going right now. So we have so many events that we'll be partnering up with, even on a statewide basis.
Wonderful.
As we say in broadcasting, back to you, Nan.
Once again, could you tell us how to get hold of you, your website?
Sure. Facebook is our primary. We're updating it every day, several times a day. So Visioning a Greater Racine. And website is www.visioningagreaterracine.org.
Excellent.
My other organization is Adventure Kids Learning. So I wear two hats, two executive director hats.
All right.
Excellent. Thanks for all you do for Racine.
Thank you for having me. You know, I love this seat, so.
Yes.
Someday when I grow up, I'll be on Dave's seat.
Excellent.
Well, you can have it in 79 months. I think the countdown's begun.
But who's counting?
No.
And you've got some events to talk about as well, don't you?
Yes, because there's always something going on, both east and west of the eye. So first of all, the Hawthorne Hollow Summer Concert Series continues. And on July 13th, Matt Meyer and the Smooth Riders will be there for your listening pleasure. Admission is $10. Food, wine, soda, and beer are available for purchase. And the time of the concert is 6 to 9 p.m. Then we have something that I'm not certain that a lot of people know about, but it's the Racine Nature Club, and they'll be meeting on July 15th from 1 to 3 p.m. at Riverbend Nature Center. And they'll be taking a family-friendly walk in the woods, exploring bugs, plants, wildlife, and other of the wonderful diverse habitats at Riverbend, ponds, forest, prairies, and the river itself. And then the Racine Nature Club will be partnering with Hoy Audubon at Samuel Myers Park on Sunday, July 22nd from noon until 2 p.m. Hoy is co-sponsoring a bird walk with the Racine Nature Club. To learn more about it, you can just go to Hoy's website. They'll search the sand for sandpipers, scan the skies for raptors, and splash in the water for fun. Rick Fair, our local bird expertise extraordinaire, will guide a search and discussion of birds out on the trails. And there's summer camps going on everywhere.
All right. You know, as I sit here listening to you ladies, I'm kind of intrigued as to how you got involved in these environmental issues. I'm one of these guys, I'll pick up litter, but I'm not a joiner, so I don't join organizations. And my wife and her sister have started to do what the runners call plogging. They go out, jog, and pick up litter as mm-hmm. they do it. And again, these are all contributions, small, but they all count. But I want both of you to tell us how you got so involved in fixing our world and cleaning it up. We'll go with you first, Nan.
Wow. How did I get involved? I don't know. I've always been an outdoor girl ever since I was a little kid. And I think you begin to develop an ethic. You begin to develop a relationship and a connection and realize that you can do great good in the world just by doing a few little things. And then hopefully what you do impacts other people. It's just my thing. It's in my soul. That's not a very good answer, but that's my answer.
Joan Rory.
Well, water, like I said, growing up here, if you don't go out of your way to drive past Lake Michigan, shame on you. But I will really say all my compass points point to that phone call from John Anderson. Hey, we're doing this thing. We're going down to Guatemala. That really flipped a switch for me, knowing that we take for granted what we have here, and then personally going and seeing what a third of the world really deals with, because a third of the world does mm-hmm. not have access to sanitation, clean water. So I will attribute that to my dear friend, John Anderson. When my Kenosha Water Utility meeting at my office in Kenosha Unified, when I put out bottled water, as every consummate host would, and the first thing they said was, never put out bottled water when water utility people come to meet. So because, you know, we want tap water. We have great tap water.
Yes, we do. We have great tap water.
That's flipped the switch even more.
Tell me this. I'll start with you this time, Joan. How much, for example, the water initiative that you deal with, I think we walk around in this country and say, I know they got problems in Guatemala with water and Haiti with water and everything else. Somebody will take care of it. So how much effort do you put into changing that mindset? Well, somebody needs to be you. How do you get people to change their mind and help you out?
Oh, boy, that's really deep, Dave. I'm a global citizen, I think, is probably the best answer I have. And I definitely feel that I can impact change wherever I am. And it happened to be at that point in time in Central America. At this point in time, I'm, you know, a greater Racine citizen. But as a global citizen, we're all responsible. We're only going to raise each other up. And as a global community, we're only as strong as our weakest link.
And here at home, Nan. How do you convince people that it, as she said, it's everybody's concerned. So how do you get people to actually pick up litter and not litter and the bottled water?
Well, a couple of things. There's an adage that says when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And so sometimes when people have come to the realization on their own that they need to change, they'll avail themselves of opportunities to do so. So perhaps they want to learn about native plants, or they want to learn about watersheds via root pike wind and that sort of thing. And so that's one opportunity to affect change. Sitting here listening to Joan, there is also, when you listen to her, there's a commitment, there's a robust enthusiasm, there's an integrity there that it's very inspiring to people. And so I think when a person can walk their walk and talk their talk, that also affects people. The great Dave White, former executive director of Riverbend, once told me one day when I was really feeling down in the dumps about the whole environmental situation, he said, you know what your job is? Your job is to plant a seed and walk away. You don't know whether it will germinate or not, but you just have to trust that in some people it will at some point in time. And I think, too, you know, I have the opportunity to work with kids. And so when you tap into their natural wonder and their natural affinity for insects and water and soil and all that sort of thing, it can affect their parents and their teachers as
most
well.
Definitely.
So there are a lot of avenues to hopefully bring about positive change.
You mentioned something earlier on when you were talking about visioning a greater Racine, where people who live in Racine or Kenosha are not the biggest cheerleaders. Meanwhile, the transplants who come in from Illinois or wherever else love these communities. How do we change that? You said we got to flip that around. That's not easy, is it? Because we do take everything for granted. We can walk down downtown Kenosha. We've got a beautiful downtown with the civic buildings. We've got the lakefront. Same in Racine with the marina and everything. How do you get people to be more of a cheerleader?
I'll go education at the end of the day. You know, we have an incredible water education program in Racine where fourth graders and seventh graders get watershed training. And what's alarming to me was finding out that the seventh graders who work on North Beach for our water education program, many of them live a few blocks away and have never visited that beach for recreation. So at the end of the day, it is about education. And whenever I would introduce a visioning session, I would ask participants to leave with one thing. The next time someone asks you, where are you from? Think about how you're responding. You know, I'm from Racine, Wisconsin. And, I'm from Racine, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And we have incredible things happening. And anyone who thinks there's nothing going on here is really under a rock.
Yeah.
Because on any given day, there's activities, free music, museums, water, beach, incredible things happening. But you have to open your eyes to see them. Mm-hmm. You're from Racine, Wisconsin. Be proud of that. We have tremendous opportunity and potential, and great things are already happening. So I guess I'm just the big cheerleader at heart.
All right, we got 2 minutes left here, and has your organization, Joan, taken a point of view on Foxconn?
We wouldn't say that our organization has taken a view on that, no. I mean, the WAVE teams are certainly all aware of it. We are looking at a tsunami about, I'll go with the water theme here, about to hit our community. So anyone who's working on any of the WAVE teams that would have impact, we were working on this initiative long before Foxconn was really a wink in our community's eye. It's not a magic button. We still need pride and positive self-image. We still want our children to be safe, loved, and have the best education possible. All of these initiatives were with or without Foxconn. So it's the community that's going to build us up, not one magic button.
All right, very good. One more time, your website.
Visioningagreaterracine.org.
Very good. Nan Calvert, as always, thank you for coming in on a monthly basis. We appreciate it.
Always my pleasure. Thank you so much.
You did a great job hosting the show today.
Gosh, thanks.
Joan, thank Rory, you. Lovely
thank you
seeing
both.
You again. 9 o'clock. The Morning Show. Support for The Morning Show comes from UW Parkside, now offering the Sports Management Master's Degree Program. Students learn the business skills necessary to succeed in today's competitive sports environment. Flexible degrees for in-demand careers. You can find out more at uwp.edu. Quick check on the weather forecast as we head towards 9:01 and news from NPR. For today, sunny and hot, a high of 89 degrees, cooler near Lake Michigan. Overnight, partly cloudy and mild. Overnight, low 68. Tomorrow, Friday, sunny and very hot, high of 93 with a heat index near